They're both about Joseph and his from the beginning of his life in Egypt and through his, well, we've been studying about popular stories in the Old Testament, and both of these chapters cover two of those popular stories. And we see something in Joseph, especially in chapter 39, where he's been bought by Potiphar. Remember, the Ishmaelites had come and taken him out of the pit where his brothers had left him, and they are taking him to Egypt. It was a trade caravan that was traveling through the land of Canaan, and they were going to Egypt to sell their wares. And as was one of the customs in their day, if they took a person captive, they, wherever they stopped, they traded them for money and sold them off into slavery. And so Egypt was well known for that in that day. Egypt was a land of where they observed slavery in that day. They bought slaves. Joseph, being of the house of Abraham, we know, if for those watching, if you've never read through the rest of this of his story, you know that this is not the end of him. You would think when he was taken by the Ishmaelites that you would never hear from him again. But God wasn't done with him. He was long from being done with him, actually. And Joseph is greatly rewarded for being faithful to God. Remember, he is the son of, the oldest son of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Jacob's most beloved wife, and he's Jacob's most beloved son. At this point in time, from what we read previously, Jacob assumes he's dead. He doesn't know he's still alive. And that's according to what his brothers told their father. They told him, you know, here's this coat of many colors that Jacob had given him. Here's his coat. It's, you know, they killed a young goat and spread the blood on the coat and ripped it or whatever else they did to it to make it look like he had been attacked by a wild animal. And there's no trace of him, though. I always thought that was kind of odd. Why didn't Jacob ask for his body? But I guess if they passed it off as being a wild animal, maybe he just assumed he ate, was eaten by the wild animal. I don't know. Doesn't really tell us. But so let's start with chapter 39, verse 1. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. So we see this man Potiphar. He's an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard. He's in charge of, from my understanding, very possibly could have been in charge of the palace guards that guarded the palace of Pharaoh. By the term an officer of Pharaoh, he's in direct contact with Pharaoh frequently. In other words, he may have even been under the direct authority of Pharaoh himself, because he is captain of the guard. And he's an Egyptian. There's no mistake here. He's an Egyptian. He's not a Canaanite. He's not a slave. He has been born and raised in Egypt by Egyptian parents. And he's fully Egyptian, which means he's also not a godly man, doesn't it? Because at this point in time, remember, Joseph is the first man to be, or the first man of God since Abraham. Now, Abraham and Sarah traveled to Egypt way back in their day, but they didn't stay long. Jacob's going to stay for a long time. And so Joseph is going to stay for a long time. Joseph is really going to be the first one to show how a godly man is to act, how a child of God is to act around those of the world. And we'll see that here in a moment. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now, prosperous doesn't necessarily mean wealth. It can. It can also mean spiritual things. And if you notice, Joseph here, it says, and the Lord was with him. The Lord showed mercy on him, grace and mercy on him, because he's going to be, his descendants are going to be one of the 12 tribes of Israel. Now he says he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. In other words, he had, as his master, as Potiphar had direct contact with Pharaoh, Joseph has direct contact with Potiphar. He is one of the house servants. We don't know exactly what his duties were, or at least not yet anyway. He tells a little bit later, but at this point in time, we don't know what his duties were, other than he's a prosperous man. In other words, he's helped his master become a prosperous man. He has done things. He has conducted business or whatever for his master, and we'll see a little bit more about that here in a moment, but he's, because the Lord was with him, he has become a good and faithful servant to not just the Lord, but to his master here on earth also, to Potiphar. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Potiphar recognizes this. Well, we think, well, Potiphar is not a godly man, but how does he know? Well, remember, even as far back as Abraham, Abraham had traveled to Egypt. The Egyptians knew of the God of Abraham through Abraham. They had heard the rumors coming out and the stories coming out of Canaan. Remember, these Ishmaelites traveled to Egypt regularly with their trade caravans, so they would tell stories of what they had seen and what they had heard from the Canaanites about the descendants of Abraham. And remember also, these Ishmaelites would have been descendants from the other line of Abraham. So they would have, because Ishmael in the beginning, Ishmael was raised in the house of Abraham, he would have been taught the ways of God by Abraham. Remember, he is up until the time that Abraham kicked him and his mother out of the house, Ishmael was being taught by Abraham to be the chosen one before Isaac was born. Now, we see Joseph, just through his witness, just through how he acts every day, he doesn't... We don't know what exactly he was doing, but we know that just the way he presented himself every day, his godly living, we like to say that he probably wasn't the type to curse or tell dirty jokes, or he didn't chase women, who obviously, because we see that here in a few moments, he wasn't a drunkard, there are all kinds of things that he didn't participate in. He didn't follow after the pagan gods of Egypt either. We'll see that later in a few chapters, not this one. But he wasn't fully ingrained into their society. He was a good servant, but it was because the Lord was with him, and because he, through his lifestyle and through his demeanor and through his way of life, he presented the Lord. And Joseph found grace in his sight, talking about Potiphar, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. How is this possible? You would think, well, why would an Egyptian, especially someone high up in the military and someone high up in the house of Pharaoh, turn over everything to a man who is, for one, he's a Christian, or at least what we'd like to think. He was a child of God. And he didn't follow after their religious orders. But everything he touched prospered. Remember with Jacob, when he went to leave his father-in-law Laban, and he took of Laban's flocks and herds the spotted animals, and he left the clean animals? What happened? Jacob's spotted animals outproduced Laban's clean animals, and Laban's sons threw a fit about it. Well, what happens here? Well, Joseph, the same sort of the same thing happens here with Joseph. Everything he touches that's Potiphar's prospers. So, in essence, what he's done is he's made Potiphar a wealthy man. And Potiphar is just a captain of the guard. He's not what you would normally think is a wealthy man. Certainly, in their day, similar to the way we do today, Potiphar would have possibly, he was wealthy enough to have servants, and it appears as though Joseph was not the only servant that he had. But in their day, you know, they still would have invested their money in things, whether it would have been in livestock or I don't know what they would have done as far as, you know, people today play the stock market, or maybe it was just putting money in the bank and let it build interest. Whatever Potiphar had assigned Joseph to do, Joseph was very good at it, and he prospered. But the behind the scenes part of this story is, it wasn't Joseph, it was the Lord. It was the Lord using Joseph to prosper Potiphar, but it wasn't for Potiphar's benefit, it was for Joseph's benefit. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. You see that? It's all for Joseph. Why? Well, it was to make, for one, we think, well, it was to make his life comfortable while he's in slavery. You know, it could have been much worse. He could have been one of the field hands or one of the shepherds or somebody who was digging ditches or doing whatever. But instead, he's in Potiphar's house. He's in the good. And in many cases, the house servants, oftentimes, the master often treated them as good as the family sometimes. Now, they didn't have an inheritance, but they might receive gifts. They might... They were usually treated a lot better than the others. And so this is what's happened to Joseph. And it came to pass from that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. So Potiphar also has fields. Not only his house, but his fields. So he's prospered. He's, because of Joseph, the Lord has prospered Potiphar. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. So Potiphar, he's got his own job, remember. He's captain of the guard. So you know, if you've ever been in management or supervision, you know that you've got duties to take you away from your main people usually. So Potiphar's a very busy man with his job. He's turned everything at home over to Joseph. Joseph knows more about Potiphar's possessions and what goes on in his own house and in his own fields than Potiphar does. But that's what Potiphar wants. He wants a man who can take care of things. And he's honest. He's not a thief. He's not stealing from Potiphar. He could have, but he's not. He's a godly man. And Potiphar respects this. he promotes him to being over everything in his house and in his fields. And then it says Potiphar doesn't even know what he's got. Joseph has done such a great job managing all of Potiphar's affairs. Potiphar himself doesn't even know what he's got. All he knows is he's got bread on his table. He's got food to eat. That's all he cares about. And the bills are paid. He doesn't have to worry about anything. And it says Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. That's what Potiphar thought of him. That's what the rest of those in Egypt that knew him. They thought, man, Potiphar's got the perfect servant. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused, and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So, here we see the problem. Here's the popular story we've all heard since childhood. Potiphar's wife is jealous of Joseph, it appears, because Joseph has been such a good person and has prospered so well. And it's very possible that Potiphar thinks more of Joseph than he does his own wife. Not in a romantic way, but in a friendly way. He's good to him. And so, to get her husband's attention, she chases after Joseph. And Joseph, when she starts, it's almost as immediately as she first starts these advances toward him, that he lets her know, Joseph lets her know, that I'm not interested. You know, my master has given me everything, he put me in charge of everything in his house except for you. Why would I go against my master's wishes? But also notice he says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Joseph was more afraid of God than he was Potiphar. Or he wouldn't have said it this way. And what do you think she would have thought about that? Well, she didn't care about his God, did she? The Egyptians, if you read any of their history, were known for infidelity, especially in the royalty and in the wealthy. And it was no big deal to her. Others were doing it. Why couldn't she do it? I also want to point out something here, too. You notice, if you remember the history of slavery anyway in Bible times, you look at Daniel, especially in the book of Daniel, first couple chapters of the book of Daniel, first chapter in particular. Most of the time when men were taken into slavery, they were made eunuchs, were they not? Joseph's not. If he were, Potiphar's wife would not have approached him in this manner. And remember, Joseph is also one of the 12 tribes. He's the head of one of the 12 tribes eventually. So he couldn't be a eunuch. So there's an exception here. And it's God that's made that exception here. For this purpose and for this time, Joseph, although he's a slave in Egypt, he has not been made a eunuch. And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day. Now, we don't know how long this took place, but we know it was every day for several days. That he hearkened not unto her, to lie by her, or to be with her. So not only did he ignore her advances to lie with her, he didn't even want to be around her for this whole reason. This is, she's tempting him. And him being a man, it would have been tempting. Now, we don't know about Potiphar's wife. Was she a beautiful woman? Was she homely? We have no idea. It doesn't tell us. But she's making these advances to Joseph. And she should know better. He's told her why he can't. And she didn't listen. But she pesters him every day, day in and day out. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business. And there was none of the men of the house there with him. So now she's got him in the house alone. All the rest of the men are gone. Potiphar's not there. The other male servants are gone. Whoever else in the house, there's nobody there but him and her. And she called him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. Now some will say, well, this was his first mistake. He left his garment. Well, not necessarily. I think this just shows us how quickly and how desperate he was to get away. She grabbed him by his garment and he slipped out of it. In other words, it says garment here, but it was probably, my understanding is more like a robe or a coat. Whatever is the head servant, he might have had some type of uniform, is what we would call it today, but it would have been something that signified that he was the head servant of the house, so that when she presents this to Potiphar, her husband, there is no doubt who it belongs to. If it had just been a regular shirt or regular clothes, it could have been anybody. But from the garment that he left, everybody knows whose it belongs to. There's only one man that it belongs to. But notice, as soon as she grabbed him, he fled. And isn't that the way we should be with our sins? When we're tempted, we should flee. Now, it doesn't always require us to run. Physically run, because most of us now can't physically run, but it may just be changing our thoughts. It may be changing the channel on the television or turning the television off or doing something different, walking away from someone who's, if you work a job and you're, especially if you're in a break room, I've been in those situations where you're in the break room and it's just one dirty joke after another from the other guys. And sometimes you just have to get up and walk out when they don't stop and just go somewhere else. And that happens. That's the way we should be. We should be fleeing from those things. Verse 14, he was fled forth, and she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, "See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice." Now, he brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. What did she mean by that? Well, remember, the Hebrews didn't observe multiple gods as they did, is one reason, I think. And he was a godly man. He was a man who was upright and followed the Lord. And they weren't used to that. They did observe their, and were, whatever you want to call it, stayed true to their false gods, but not like the Hebrews. They see here, even Potiphar's wife has heard the rumors and has heard the tales about the Hebrews, about the children of Abraham. And it's very possible that they may even remember the story or have heard the story of how Abraham and Sarah found their way to Egypt. Remember, Abraham and Sarah, when they were in Egypt, Abraham tried to pass Sarah off as his sister because he was afraid Pharaoh was going to kill him. And it brought a lot of distress on Pharaoh. Once he found out what was going on, Pharaoh began to understand that, hey, if I would taken this man's wife as my wife, his God would have punished me for that, might have even killed me. So, Potiphar's wife here may have heard those stories. It hadn't been too many generations before. For whatever reason, the Hebrews at this time was not looked favorably upon mostly in Egypt. Now, Joseph had begun to change that as far as Potiphar was concerned. He had been a faithful servant, more than faithful. He had gone over and above what he was called to do as a servant. But now this situation arises. And as with any husband and wife, Joseph, or at least what Joseph is accused of, he has touched the household, the inward household of Potiphar. Potiphar has trusted him with everything else. And now it appears as though Joseph has taken advantage of the situation. And it came to pass, back up to verse 14 again. That she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, "See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice." Well, immediately she lies about it. That's not what happened. For one, he didn't come in unto her. She kept trying to get him to, but he wouldn't do it. And she didn't cry with a loud voice. Otherwise, others would have heard her, wouldn't they? There's no record of the others hearing her crying out in desperation. And it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. Well, that's not at all how it played out, is it? Now, she may have cried out loud because she wanted him to stay. Or maybe out of part of her lie, she may have cried out so others would hear as part of the ploy against Joseph. But he did leave his garment, and he fled. He got out, and she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. Now, that's kind of a strange situation, isn't it? Why wouldn't she have just left it wherever he had left it as evidence? Instead, it's like she held on to it and clung to it till his Lord came home, till Potiphar came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, "The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out." So she tells the whole lie over again to Potiphar. She's got her story straight anyway. That's kind of unusual for people in this type of situation. If you watch the movies or the soap operas or whatever, you see people who, and even in real life, these things play out in real life. People oftentimes get their stories mixed up when they have to tell it the second time. But this time she tells it exactly as she did the first time. "And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled." So, Potiphar's first mistake is not just that he listened to his wife. He should have listened to his wife. Okay? Don't misunderstand. He should have had that close relationship with his wife. From what we've been reading, though, he wasn't that close to his wife. It doesn't appear. He was closer to Joseph than he was his wife. But she is his better half. He should have listened to her. Then, before he got angry about this, shouldn't he have contacted Joseph and got his side of the story? Or maybe even asked the other servants in the house, you know, "Hey, did y'all see anything?" There's no investigation here. And one thing I've always told people is get both sides of the story before you get angry and blow up at somebody. And if you can't, and I understand there's times where maybe you can't contact the other person. Maybe they've passed away. Maybe there's too great a distance, or they won't answer the phone, or whatever the deal is. Sometimes you can't, but you should try to get both sides of the story. And especially in a situation like this, Potiphar should have went and got the other side of the story. Instead, Verse 20 says, "And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison." So Potiphar has him put it into prison. So this offense that he did, that he's accused of, he's not even put on trial. He's not innocent until proven guilty. He's proven guilty to begin with just by one witness, Potiphar's wife. And then Potiphar has her put into the prison. And it's not just any prison. It's where the king's prisoners are. The political prisoners, if you will. Those who have committed crimes against the king himself. Verse 21, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison." Everywhere Joseph goes, he's shown favor by God. Even while he's in prison. And we think about that, we think, man, that's a horrible place to be. And especially in their day, especially the sanitary conditions that you think of, or that you hear about, read about in history of these prisons. But Joseph is, he's found favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison, of the warden of the prison. He's found favor in his sight. And it doesn't stop there. "And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it." He's put in charge of all the prisoners. Because God has shown mercy on him. He's not, even though he's the newest prisoner, he's not the lowest prisoner. He's been made the highest prisoner. He's over everybody. You don't see any uprisings. You don't see any protests. They all go along with it. The Lord is truly with Joseph, even though he's in prison. And isn't that that's how it is with us? When we're at our lowest point, God still has mercy on us and blesses us. "The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper." Again, God makes Joseph, not just Joseph to prosper, but his employer. Now his employer is the keeper of the prison. And you notice he says that the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand. The keeper of the prison let Joseph do whatever he wanted to do. He trusted him. And where does this come from? Well, you would think very possibly that this keeper of the prison, being in management, is probably friends with Potiphar. He's may even be under Potiphar, as far as Potiphar being a captain of the guard. And so he knows about Joseph. He knows how faithful Joseph is to his master. And so all these things that the Lord has blessed Joseph in, he blesses also his masters, whether it's Potiphar or it's his keeper of the prison. Now, the next thing, if you go to chapter 40, it's just a continuation. He's still in prison. "And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt." So two men who are direct servants of the king have offended the king in whatever way. Butler and the baker. Some say it was because he burnt bread. Others say the butler did whatever. You know, we don't know what they did to offend him. But Pharaoh was wroth against these two officers, two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. These are men in high authority in Pharaoh's own house. "And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound." So we see here, they're put in the same prison as Joseph. And notice it says he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard. Who was the captain of the guard? Potiphar. So Potiphar is still over Joseph. He's over the prison also. "And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, And he served them, and they continued a season in ward. So they've put Joseph over these two men. And they dreamed a dream, both of them, talking about the butler and the baker. Each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And what happens when we read about men, even ungodly men, who are having dreams? Well, next thing you know, the man of God that's in the story interprets the dreams, doesn't he? This is one of the first times, I believe, that we see this in the Scripture. But it'll go on all throughout the Old Testament. You see where God's men interpret dreams of those who are not godly. In the next chapter, when we get there, Lord willing, next week, in chapter 41, we see where he interprets Pharaoh's dreams. But here in verse 6, "And Joseph came in unto them in the morning, and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers, what were that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, Wherefore look ye so sadly today? And they said unto him, We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." So they had dreamed a dream, each one, but they had no idea what it meant. And Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you." What does he tell them? He says, no one can interpret your dreams. If you remember, even if you go to, well, whether it was Pharaoh or whether it was Nebuchadnezzar, other kings mentioned in Daniel and in some other places in the Old Testament, it was only the man of God who could interpret the dreams, and it was only by God that he could do that. He couldn't do it on his own. It was God that revealed it to him, and then he would reveal it to that king, whoever the king was. And so it is with these two men. Joseph tells them, only God can interpret dreams. And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said unto him, "In my dream, behold, a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches, and it was as though it budded, and her blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand." And so we see here the first instance of grape juice, don't we, in the Bible. He has this dream about this vine, and it produces grapes. They're ripe grapes. He squeezes them into Pharaoh's cup and gives Pharaoh a cup to drink. And what does Joseph say about the interpretation? Joseph said unto him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy place, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler." So we can see this butler was the cupbearer, the main cupbearer, anyway, of Pharaoh. And so Joseph tells him, the dream, the interpretation of your dream is, in 3 days, you're going to return. Pharaoh's going to come and return you back to your former position in the kingdom. And then he says, "But think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house." Joseph's only request in this, he doesn't ask for money or possessions. He says, "Remember me when you come out, when you go out of the prison, when you go back to where you were, and you're before Pharaoh. Ask him to release me, to take me out of here. That's all he's asking for. For indeed I was stolen away out of the hand of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. So not only is he asking to be brought out of the prison, but he's wanting out of Potiphar's house. He wants sent back home to his family. And remember, all his whole situation has been deceptive from the beginning. Remember, his brothers deceptively got him to come out, and they took him. They put him in the pit, and their goal was to sell him to the Ishmaelites. The Ishmaelites took him. They brought him to Egypt, sold him into slavery, and then he was lied about again by Potiphar's wife, and now he's in dungeon on false pretenses, and no one will hear his case. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, I also was in my dream, and beheld I had three white baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there was all manner of baked meats, in other words, baked goods, for Pharaoh. And the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. And Joseph answered and said, now this man gets a different interpretation, not so good interpretation. Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation of the three baskets or 3 days, yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee. Doesn't sound very pleasant, does it, for the baker? We still don't know what these two men did, the baker and the butler, to get thrown into prison. We just know that they did something against that didn't please Pharaoh. Whatever the butler did appears as though it was not as bad as what happened to the baker, because the butler gets his job back, but the baker is put to death. Two different scenarios there, two different stories there of these two men. We don't know what they did, but obviously one of them did something worse than the other. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants. And he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. And when it says that he lifted up their head, it just means that he woke them up, brought them to him face to face. They had to face him. And he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again. And he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forget him. So it appears as though the chief butler didn't keep his promise, did he? Well, actually, we didn't see him make the promise anyway. Joseph asked him to remember him. Well, it says, yet did not the chief butler remembered Joseph, but he forgot about him. He got his job back. He was happy. He didn't care about anybody else. That's all he cared about. He didn't get hung like the baker did. That was his main concern. But Joseph, we'll see next time Joseph dealing with Pharaoh's dreams. Joseph becomes a great and mighty man in Egypt eventually. And it's all because, well, what have we heard at least twice in this story in the last two chapters? Because God was with him. That's why. And God was with him, and God prospered him for Joseph's sake. Not for the sake of the ones in Egypt, those heathens in Egypt, but for Joseph, because Joseph stayed faithful to the Lord. So, I think especially chapter 39 and chapter 42, I guess, but chapter 39 in particular, that it should be an encouragement to us, whether it's on the job or it's just out in public or within the Lord's church, whatever, we should be doing what the Lord has called us to do, whether it's preaching the gospel or it's just presenting ourselves in a godly way. Oftentimes we forget these things. We forget that we're to live in a way that others see Christ in us. That doesn't mean that you go out and just wildly proclaiming Christ at will, but doing it in a godly way. There is a proper way to do things. What was the term I was trying to think of? You used to hear Jesus freaks. That's what they used to call themselves. That's not necessarily the way to do it. The world is still going to think you're a fool for doing it in an orderly way. But doing it in a way that God's people think you're a fool is not good. So, but remember Joseph. Remember the things that he did for the Lord. And maybe we need to examine ourselves and see if we're being the same way. So we'll stop there for this morning.